minute, 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to
Grant Cameron himself. And he has one of the most intrepid guests that are on, and I haven't heard her voice in a good while. And so I'm going to have to take Grant out for a steak dinner for bringing the beautiful Rebecca Hardcastle right onto the program tonight. It's wonderful to have her back. And Grant, I know you've got a ton of questions all lined up for Rebecca. So, you know, I'm going to bring you in straight away. We're going to run this one commercial free like we did last week. You did so well. And I'm going to buy the commercial stop set for you, bro, so you can just you can just tear out and go and do your thing, my man.
Okay, thank you, Race. It's August the 28th, 2018. This is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Cameron Files. I want to thank you for taking some of your valuable time to listen. And as always, fasten your seatbelts for takeoff. We are about to go very, very fast. My guest tonight is Rebecca Hardcastle Wright, PhD. She's one of the authors of a new book that's out here called Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence, Volume 1. I have stated for the record a number of times, this is the most important UFO book ever written. We've gotten past the sightings, we've gotten past the metal, and we've gotten to the consciousness thing. And Rebecca is the founder of the Institute for Exoconsciousness, whose mission is to research and apply the abilities of human consciousness sourced in extraterrestrial experience. She created the concept of exoconsciousness, which is the study of extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of human consciousness. Rebecca's signature is bringing consciousness, science, and ET experiencers out. Her work encourages us to explore the questions. And I want to welcome you, Rebecca. Thank you for taking your time to join me. I have a lot of very interesting questions to ask you because you and I are playing field dealing with consciousness.
Oh, thank you, Grant. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. Thank you.
Yeah. Before I get to consciousness, I just want to make sure I get this in, because you never know where these conversations go, I have two very interesting questions that are sort of related but not related, and I want to do those first to make sure I get them in for the record. A couple of years ago, people will know I was working on the Podesta email leak, all these material that were coming out. And while I was doing that, you contacted me and you were helping me keep on the straight and narrow and get the story straight. So many people may not know you were one of the main people that was being talked about when it came to UFO emails. Can you tell me your role with John Podesta, with the emails, with your good friend Edgar Mitchell, and what really went on there?
I don't know all that went on there in terms of the Podesta emails. I think people are still sort of ferreting that out. But for my role in it, I had been living in Washington, D.C. I had moved to Washington, D.C. in 2011 to work with Dr. Mitchell on his Quantract organization, that we were studying free energy, consciousness, and the extraterrestrial presence. I mean, just the fact that Edgar was combining those three, I mean, what a trinity, huh?
Yeah.
We were reaching out, fundraising, actually with billionaires at that time. I was working with a lot of international scientists, and I had moved to Washington, D.C. because my family was there and my husband's family was there. We moved from Phoenix to D.C. So it was a good move for us family-wise as well as professionally. So I just met a lot of people, did a lot of networking, and tried to bring forth the message of zero-point energy, of the extraterrestrial presence, did some disclosure work. And part of that, Edgar and I reached out to John Podesta and asked him if he could arrange a meeting with himself and Barack Obama. He was, at that time, the counsel in White House counsel. At that point, Podesta was the White House counsel for Barack Obama. So we reached out to him, and I just threw a series of phone calls and reached out to his assistant, and who actually I think had been at his institute prior to that, prior to her coming from the White House. She was just Erin Sepp, just a lovely woman and very, very helpful. And so we were setting up a meeting, and John said that he would take the meeting with us first, with Edgar and me first, and then President Obama would be then a subsequent meeting after that. And so we were just exchanging emails, talking about disclosure, talking about the need for zero-point energy, for that to be brought out in the open to the planet. And Podesta set up, I think, the week of August 11th. And I think this was 2014. He set up the week of August 11th and said, my week's open. I'm going to be in town. Erin will help coordinate a time for Dr. Mitchell to come in, and we'll have a meeting. And unfortunately, because I was in D.C., Dr. Mitchell was in Florida. He was in Lakeland, Florida, living at the time. And I didn't really know how ill he was, quite frankly. And it turned out that I kind of had sort of rumblings about it. But, you know, when you work online with somebody or via phone or whatever, you don't really get the whole story of their life. And so he actually said that he could not make the meeting, and so we had to cancel the meeting. And then I reached out a time or two after that to say, you know, well, could we set up a Skype? And it just didn't work out. So about 2 years later, Edgar's passed away, and I'm working for myself, actually establishing the Institute for Exoconsciousness. And I get an email, and it's from a man in Florida who's a psychic. And he said, you know, I need to get this information to you. I was just walking around outside. I saw this massive rainbow in Florida. I live down the street from Edgar Mitchell, and, you know, he's passed over. We all miss him, and he's got a message for you. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay. So he sent me the message, and it was a lovely message. And about a day or two later, I get a call from, I think it was Victor Vigiani called me and said, turn on your computer. You won't believe what just hit. And I'm like, okay. So after that, it was very interesting. I mean, I got some phone calls, and at the beginning, I turned my phone off at night, but it was a wonderful experience, and I think it was a very powerful affirmation of Edgar's work also.
Yeah, and wasn't there a letter from Edgar to Podesta?
Well, actually, I wrote those emails his behalf, so they all.
Because there was some question whether
email.
It was legitimate. I remember that. No. People were questioning. Yeah.
Actually, the way that we worked with Edgar was I would write the emails. I would send it to him as a draft. Yeah. He would okay them. I mean, that's normal. Yeah. Yeah. Things happen like that, and then send it back. And then I actually sent it out over my email, which actually had all of my personal information on it, my phone number.
Yeah. You had the famous email. What was your email? It was a famous one that I remember. It was the, what had to do with the billionaires. It was.
Oh, no, that was Terry Mansfield had the billionaire one. They actually, after I left, after the cancellation of the meeting, I just felt like, you know, I done what I came there to do, and it was really time for me to move on, which was really what Edgar's message a couple years later was about. You need to move on. You need to move out of D.C. You need to move on and do the work that you were doing before. But so Terry Mansfield picked that up, and she and Suzanne Mendelson tried to arrange another Skype meeting, but really nothing ever came of it.
Okay. One last question on this sort of, I think, is sort of a wasted subject, but everybody always asks me, so I'll ask you to speculate. You sort of had some interaction with the Washington crowd, what was going on there. People always ask me, do you think if Hillary had been elected that Podesta and her would have made a move to do something?
Oh, I definitely think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now it's coming out of a whole different, the whole disclosure is coming from a whole different perspective with Trump and, you know, his relationship to Nixon, his relation to John Trump, his uncle, and, yeah, that whole MIT group. I think it's coming out of a very, very different place right now. So
you're pretty
it's
encouraged.
Very interesting. In terms of a top-down disclosure,
yeah.
Because my field is consciousness or exoconsciousness, I've always felt that if we were going to have if the extraterrestrials and the non-human intelligences wanted to have a top-down, we would have had it by now.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Thanks for that. Now for the thing that fascinates me, and this will link us into consciousness here. You may know, you may not know, I spend a lot of time trying to collect stories of people who've flown the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And you flew the craft.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just sort of read what you wrote here, and then you can sort of comment about the craft, you know, the fact that it's alive, this sort of stuff. And what was very important with yours was that you live in the Phoenix area, and I didn't get into consciousness until 2012. I had this experience. In 2013, I was talking to Pam Dupuy, who you may know in the Scottsdale area. And she was talking to me. I had done a consciousness lecture, and it was sort of like I got hit by the consciousness bus. And so I've only been on the bus for a couple of stops, and I basically got on to go to the hospital. But Pam Dupuy told me the story the first time that she'd flown the craft, and I thought she was absolutely insane. So I've only known about this since 2013. Your story is extremely important because your book was 2008 when you talk about this. So you were talking about it long before I ever started to discover. Now I've got about 50 people. So this is what you wrote. Then they escorted me to out of the room. I ran up to my favorite place on the craft, the cupola. In the cupola, I was privileged to navigate the craft. I stood at the helm. My mind shifted into a relaxed glide. My small hands, one with the craft. I navigated the craft through space. Star maps were stored in my conscious mind. I navigated easily among star systems, and my consciousness fit the craft. We were one. And and I read it again the other day. It sort of sent shivers up my spine because I've talked to so many people about this, 747 airline pilots, F-16 jet fighter pilots, and everybody describes it as if they're reading off a cue card. So maybe talk about your encounters on the ship in terms of what a lot of people don't realize, this very important part of consciousness, that it's basically everything when you get on the craft.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel that especially after working with Edgar and all of the international scientists that we were working with, there's an urge, just almost like an existential urge going on today in terms of trying to link consciousness and science and technology, like consciousness technology. And I just have to sit here now after the experiences that I have, and I continue to have a lot of just amazing ongoing experiences, and to see the how we are still in material science so heavily, and trying to make artificial brains and, you know, put implants in people's brains so that, you know, they can do certain things or in their bodies, and, you know, this kind of robotic consciousness. And I just, at first, to be honest with you, Grant, at first it kind of it disturbed me. I'm like, you're going the wrong way.
Exactly. You nailed it. Yeah.
And especially after living in D.C., I'm like, and I spent probably about 3 years in D.C. just going down that rabbit hole of transhumanism and robotics and artificial intelligence. And, you know, I met people from DARPA and different, you know, intelligence agencies. And I just continued to be astounded the information I was bringing forth. And to sort of wrap up the information I was getting in D.C., I went to yoga. I'd like to go to yoga. And I went to yoga, and after the class, there was a woman, probably in her 50s, I would think, and she walked out with me to the back parking lot, and we were standing there, and I said, oh, you know, what do you do? We were kind of chatting. I asked her, you know, the D.C. question. I said, oh, what do you do? And she goes, oh, I work for DARPA. I've been there about 30 years working in consciousness. I mean, wow. You could have just knocked me over, right? Wow. And I said, oh, that's interesting. That's my field, too. And I've been studying transhumanism and artificial intelligence. And I said, so where are you in terms of what you can tell me, what you're doing in terms of artificial intelligence and just the whole linking of consciousness to technology? And she goes, oh, that's an easy answer. I said, what's that? And she goes, we're stuck. I said, oh, really? And she goes, yeah. I mean, she was so forthcoming. And she said, yeah, we're totally stuck. She goes, we're not going anywhere. She goes, we're going the wrong way. And I looked at her, and I just was like, you know, kind of held onto my yoga mat and thought, I just looked up at her, and I said, well, do you think maybe it's because you have the wrong definition of consciousness?
Exactly.
And she goes, well, that's absolutely the problem.
Exactly. It's the old thing, like the materialistic, it's almost like they've gone to the secular Sunday school for so long that they can't get out of this biological robot in a random, meaningless universe. They can't shake it.
Well, it's interesting. It's like, don't you have any imagination? You know, it's almost like their imagination comes out of Hollywood or something. I'm just continue to be stunned at it. It's like, this is not where our species is supposed to go. Our species is supposed to be one with materialism. Actually, part of our the work of our institute is that we're working with psychokinesis and experiment. I mean, humans are supposed to change matter.
Yeah.
That's what our job is. And I sat down and I just wrote a little booklet called How Exoconscious Humans Guide Our Spacefaring Future. How about that for a mouthful? And one of the things I do in the front of the booklet is that I look at what extraterrestrial experiencers or psychic people really bring to technology. And, you know, at some point, scientists have got to look at the fact that if you're an ET experiencer, you're time traveling, you're bending time, you're moving through space, you're moving through wormholes, you're telepathic, you're doing all of these things that are outside the purview of science that technology wants to get to, and yet no one ever talks to us.
Exactly.
There is such a disconnect. There's like this chasm between experiencers and people in technology, engineers or scientists, but especially engineers, I would say. And if we're really going to go into space, if we're really going to go into the cosmos in any kind of a meaningful way, like, sure, you know, we can jump up there and mine the moon or whatever, or mine the asteroid or whatever. But I mean, if we're really going into deep space in any meaningful way, it's going to be through consciousness. It's not going to be through, you know, these metal craft or, you know, metamaterial craft or whatever they're putting together. That it has to be a unified field, I guess is the best word for it. There's a unified field between science, technology, and consciousness. And that's what our institute is all about, is bringing this information forward and literally showcasing ET experiencers to the point where people are going to notice us, because you know as well as I do that, you know, we haven't exactly been, you know, the primary act in ufology.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you mentioned scientists, so you were there, you were working with Edgar. So can you name some of the scientists? Because this is actually just brought up recently again, this whole thing that we're going to sort of grab consciousness and put it in a biological robot and this kind of stuff. Was there any scientists, or can you name some of the scientists that sort of have caught on to what's going on?
It's been years, but if Al Schwimmer here at ASU, we were working with him, Glenn Rain, that HeartMath. We're also working with, of course, David Darling is a scientist that we worked with. There's many. I don't know. I'm not the best with names. I could probably send you a list of 10 or 15 people.
Wow. Yeah, because that's the thing is...
Walter Shemp, of course, that did the quantum hologram. He was the mathematician that did the quantum hologram. See, Edgar came up with the whole quantum hologram idea, but he really came up with it because of Walter Shemp and his work as a German mathematician. And actually, interestingly enough, Shemp was related to Kepler.
Oh, wow.
How about that for genealogy? Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. And so you do all this. Give us your definition. Maybe, I guess, for there may be some people who, again, think that this may not be that important. So give your definition of consciousness, and do you... you and the scientists, do you believe that consciousness is primary, matter is secondary, or have people caught on to this thing?
I really wouldn't do a primary or secondary. I would say that consciousness is a fundamental property of the universe.
Yeah.
There's not really any stratification. Yeah. But it's a building block of the universe. Consciousness is a building block of the universe. And some of the humans that are learning to use this building block and create science and create inventions with it. But my definition of consciousness would be that consciousness is really experienced as a field that we as humans, with our entire body, I would add, not just our brain, but with our entire body, that we receive and transmit information, and in a very important aspect, we also participate in this field, and in doing so, we change it. So we literally change the field of consciousness as we participate in it with our own consciousness and learning to maneuver, you know, out of body experiences or psychic experiences or telepathy or all of these, you know, I call it psychic intelligence.
And you use the word exoconsciousness, and then we get into experiencers. So can you define what that is and where you're going with that?
Well, that word was actually given to me. I was a single mom and raising my kids and just busy working and doing everything I needed to do. And so my alarm went off one morning. I hit the snooze button. I thought, oh, it's 5 minutes. I need 5 minutes before I get up and, you know, pack lunches, make breakfast, go to work, get them to school, and just kind of that the mother exhaustion mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And my head just fell back on the pillow. And this word, exoconsciousness, I mean, Grant, literally, it came in my body.
Wow.
It came in, just like that biblical, you know, the word became flesh. That's literally what happened to me. I don't think I've ever had anything happen even close to that since. And, just for some background, I mean, I've been working with an experiencer group, the Phoenix Lights had happened. A lot of my friends I did not see the Phoenix Lights, but a lot of my friends did. They were all off, you know, becoming craft researchers and, you know, moving into material science. And I didn't see the craft at first. I thought, what happened to me? I got left out. And then I thought, no, I'm supposed to do consciousness. So initially, Michael Sala asked me to be part of his institute for exopolitics. And so I was really, at that time, I don't know if you remember back when Michael founded that Exopolitics Institute, yeah. but it was really along the lines of wanting to sort of go into a dialogue with academics. And I had always been very, very comfortable in academic environments. And so I initially defined exoconsciousness as the study of the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of human consciousness. So I was really looking for something that could hook us to extraterrestrials, but also bring in the fact of human consciousness and, you know, sort of delineating areas of study that I could move into this. And so after that, then subsequently, I wrote my first book, Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind. But when we founded the Institute for Exoconsciousness, I began to see that an academic definition was fine, but we really needed to almost deepen and broaden it. And so today I define exoconsciousness as the innate human ability. So all humans have it. We have an innate human ability to connect, communicate, and importantly, co-create with extraterrestrials. So I've kind of moved it more into, you know, looking at human consciousness and as to what we actually do with human consciousness. But to just a little deepen the definition, what we began to see, and we spent about 3 years with a mastermind, actually, to create this institute. It wasn't like an overnight, you know, I wasn't like Zuckerberg. I didn't have a long weekend in the dorm with nothing to do, so I thought I'd invent Facebook. Yeah. So, you know, we all know that didn't happen. Yeah. So anyway, I spent about 3 years putting together a mastermind with all my colleagues and friends who I knew were extraterrestrial experiencers who lived all over the world. And we would have these masterminds, and we would really brainstorm and share and get to know each other and connect, actually, for many of them, for the first time with each other, and talk about, you know, what could an exoconscious institute really be able to do. And so after those 3 years, then, you know, we just completed a business plan, and we did our nonprofit. But what we began to see was that there was and this is one of the things kind of maybe segue into the Freeze book, Beyond UFOs, is that we began to see that there were a rather large segment of people who had been ongoing experiencers. And in point of fact, not only were they ongoing experiencers, but that ongoing experience had actually changed who they were, changed how they oriented themselves in the world, changed how they saw the cosmos, most importantly, how they saw themselves as human, and that this was all a result of ongoing contact where it became maturing. Really isn't a good word. I would say a better word would be it became more of an integration of their life, where it wasn't a fight where, oh God, you know, I'm seeing ETs again. It's like, this was like part of their life that we see, that we communicate, that we connect, that we actually on a daily basis and throughout our day co-create with extraterrestrials, that this is something that we do. And that because of that, we're bringing in very different information and have a very different perspective of what it means to be human. And so now we call ourselves exoconscious humans. And just for a little aside, this is the cutest story. A man reached out to me in Brazil. My husband and I just got back from Brazil. We had spent a week with, or almost 10 days with the Brazilian community, the Brazilian consciousness community. And the man who invited me, Giuliano Pozzati, P-O-Z-A-T-I, mm-hmm. I think that's how I spell his name. He said, well, you know, it's so funny. Just recently, I was just, you know, within the past year or so, I was asleep. And when I woke up, I got this word exoconsciousness.
Wow.
And so he sat down, he wrote a little booklet about it. And he goes, I thought, well, maybe I need to like see if anybody else is using this word. And so he goes, so I look on the internet, and like, here's you. And I'm like, oh, my golly, somebody else got this message, too. So it's obviously a message that whose time has come.
So you would, I think I've gotten that idea. I actually wrote a book called Inspired, the Paranormal World of Creativity.
I love that book.
And I just had a recent one. I don't know if you've heard the story about my friend, high-level guy in Hollywood. His name is Chris, who this just started less than a year ago, where suddenly, you know, he down the rabbit hole and this stuff is happening all around him. And he phones me, am I crazy? What's going on? And I said, well, I think someone's trying to contact you. I think they're trying, you should talk to them. Mm-hmm. And so what he did is he said, well, if you're actually some sort of ET or whatever you are, put something in my head that I don't know. And he said in his own voice, he heard the word biocentrics. And he had no idea what it was. And he went and looked it up and discovered this Dr. Robert Lanza, who'd written this book, which is going down sort of the same route, that life mm-hmm. creates the universe, not the other way around.
Yeah, I'm looking at the book right now.
Yeah. And so we have this thing, I think you would agree, that whoever the intelligence is, they are giving us help as we go through this.
And we are giving them help. I would go the next step.
Okay, so how would you say, what do you mean by that?
I think that, and the Institute is working from this perspective also, that we have a co-creative process, that when you get to a certain point in your, I would say, development or integration with your extraterrestrial contact, that it becomes a peer relationship. And I think that the free information actually indicated that also, that now we can see ourselves as sovereign humans who are a race who live on Earth, you know, with other beings, of course, but that we are sovereign humans and that extraterrestrials are reaching out to us. I mean, just to give you an example, I mean, one of the people in our mastermind, Darlene Vandegrift, she actually works with extraterrestrials and she helps extraterrestrials move emotionally and heal emotionally. And some of them have actually left their races and joined other races. So I think that to just, there's been this, I actually wrote about it in my chapter. I don't know if you noticed, but at one point I talked about exoconscious humans and how they were a different kind of approach to relating to extraterrestrials. And one of the paradigms I laid out is that, you know, well, we have the space empire builders, you know, we have the Musks and the Lockheed Martins, and you know, that are going to go out and they're going to build an empire, they're going to colonize, they're going to be like, you know, the ships of the Vatican, or you know, the ships of the Venetian princess, that are going to go out and they're going to, you know, they're going to colonize and they're going to plunder and desecrate and do whatever. And then on the other extreme, Grant, I think, is this whole idea that, you know, there's these this galactic council that's kind of like a country club and humans can't be members of it yet because, you know, we're too stupid. Yeah. And you know, we're in kindergarten, and or you know, we're the wrong race to be in the country club, and you know, they're going to tell us all what to do and how to do it and when to do it. And I just think that those are both really flawed perspectives. And the reality is that if you are an integrated exoconscious human, you're going to be working one-on-one in a respectful and loving and a mutually desirable relationship with extraterrestrials, and humans are making a difference in the lives of extraterrestrials as we do that. Also in my book, I laid out exoconscious humans as CE6. I think we're a CE6.
So define CE6. I noticed that.
Just for your listeners, of course, CE4 was Jacques Vallée. He very much dealt with consciousness. He was looking at folklore. He was looking at what Jacques Vallée was looking at, and a CE4 was, you know, what exactly happened when the contactee, the event of the contactee, when the reality changed, what happened, and how did they move through it? He looked at dreaming. He looked at kind of hallucinations, all the different events that surrounded contact. And then, but more contact as an event again. And then, of course, Stephen Greer, CE5, that there's some kind of a mutual a mutual agreement between humans and ETs, but that everything is about looking up and waiting for the ETs to appear. You know, we all go sit yeah. out in a lawn and look up at the stars, and we just yeah. know it's going to happen. And so it's all manifesting outside of our body. And I would say that exoconscious humans are absolutely a CE6, that it is about consciousness, and it's about the human part of our consciousness, where we, you know, once again, connect and communicate and co-create with extraterrestrials. And this isn't about an event. It's no longer about an event. It's no longer about, oh my God, I got to tell you my story. Because you've heard these stories, Grant. I mean, yep. after a while, it's like going to AA meeting. Everybody's got the same story, you know, same story, different person, yeah. you know. And, you know, it's so funny. Somebody was telling me that they said, oh, somebody contact me. They just had their first experience. They went on and on and on about it. And I just looked at them and kind of quietly said, you know, and they're like, I got to write a book. I got to tell everybody. He was like, yeah. well, I had to tell them, you know, we've all had the same experience.
Yeah. yeah.
So I think that it's really about an integrative developmental change that happens to humans, where we become very different because of not just the extraterrestrial multidimensional encounter that we have, but because of the relationship we have, because of the co-creating that we do together. That's CE6. That's very different than looking up in the sky in a lawn chair.
You mentioned Valet. Is how much is he on board with this new material?
The new material.
Well, what we're talking about right now. Because he I used to think he was like a crazy man. I mean, when he said, you know, I'd be very surprised if this turned out to be extraterrestrials in spacecraft.
Yeah, I've heard him make that comment. I do not know him, nor have I ever had a conversation with him.
Okay, I'm just wondering, because he's sort of started this sort of...
Kind of poo-pooed it.
Look deeper into what's actually going on here. Mm-hmm. It's sort of less physical than you think it is, and yet he's still sort of aligned with to the stars. So I just wondered about that. If you wrote the thing for the free book, maybe you can sort of talk a little bit about the book and what you think, because you and I are both sort of familiar with the statistics that these many, many experiencers have sort of outlined as to their experience. Maybe give a couple statistics that people should know that would give them an indication that experiences should be listened to. Because I think what I find is when I talk to people, they do the old knowing, believing thing. They say, well, you just believe these people are having these experiences. We know. And it's like, no, you don't know. You're actually the believer. So what's important about the free statistics? I think you mentioned already how it changes people's lives. And then talk a little bit about the importance of the book, because I think it's the key book, because it doesn't deal with what everybody else is dealing with. It gets to the consciousness aspect of this phenomenon.
Well, I think they interviewed like over 4,000 people that volunteered to take their survey, and the survey was so well done. A lot of it was based on Kenneth Ring's work in the Omega Project. A lot of the questions, and it was done in a very scientific, very careful way. And I think also the distribution of the survey was done very carefully also. And, you know, people's privacy was respected. So what I did was Ray was reaching out to different people to write different aspects of the survey. What they did was, I think what they did, I wasn't really on the inside. It looked to me like they looked at just the different information that was coming out of the survey, and they said, okay, we need somebody to write about contact. We need somebody to write about environmentalism. We need somebody to write about spirituality. And just the different, you know, we need somebody to write about energy. So they came to me and they asked me to do sort of a psychological analysis, but also to do an analysis via exoconsciousness. And they sent me the survey data. And I'll be honest with you, I remember sitting here in my office thinking, oh my golly, what have I done? You know, I'm reading this, you know how that feels when you write something or somebody asks you to write something. It's like, no, I got to respond. So I actually sat for days and just read the survey again and again and again, because I really wanted to respect what the respondents had to say. I didn't want to just, you know, go in there like a barn burner and say, you know, this is what it says and this is what it says. I wanted to really step back and let their voices, because some of it was survey and then some of it was just short narratives that people also offered. So I literally sat with it and let those voices speak to me. And after probably about a week of just kind of looking through, reading it again and again and again, then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my golly, you know, if I'm honest with the data, this data is really talking about exoconsciousness. This is actually, you know, what I'm seeing. And it's literally outlining the transformations that happen to people. And so what I did, I kind of did a topology, and I looked at the physical transformations that happen. I looked at all the evidence for that. I mean, the people were, you know, coming back, and you know, a majority of people were coming back and talking about they had healing experiences. I mean, 40% of the people came back and said, you know, since my contact, I feel that I can just touch people and heal them. And I can't tell you how many experiencers say that. I feel like I can touch people and heal them.
Yeah.
The people talking about how physically their DNA changed, and that they were maybe healed during the encounter. There was definitely, for me in exoconsciousness, I was always looking for how to talk about the self-transformation that happens when you become an exoconscious human. And once again, this information came right through that people felt as though it changed their view of themselves. They felt as though it gave a new meaning to their life. And, you know, a great majority of them said it gave them a new purpose in life. So their whole psychological, existential reality changed just as to how they regarded themselves. Then I looked at, of course, you know, consciousness transformations. Of course, I'm going to look at that. And people were talking about, you know, how their psychic abilities just were unleashed. And it was interesting because at the time that I was looking at the free data, I was also getting a survey from my colleagues in Brazil, from Giuliano and his community, and he had asked similar questions to his community in Brazil, and they had the free information survey and the Brazilian information survey totally correlated.
That's right.
And psychically, it turned out that in terms of psychic ability, that telepathy was by far and away the primary thing that happened, that they that experiencers had very, you know, a keen telepathic relationship with extraterrestrials. And then of course the whole spirituality. I don't know if you know my background, but I went to seminary. I'm actually ordained in the United Methodist Church, so I have a religious philosophical background.
Okay.
So that was just, to me, the whole moving away from religion into identifying themselves as spirituality, as spiritual people. And so in my chapter, I sort of begin to distinguish and pull apart a little bit, you know, what's it mean to be religious? What's it mean to be spiritual? But in terms of the whole overarching impact of the book, you know, Grant, you and I have been already in this field a long time, you know, 20 plus years. Yeah. But, you know, I just, my mentor worked on the peer group with John Mack and Leo Sprinkle and that group. So I was sort of, you know, I sort of went to the John Mack, Leo Sprinkle, Ruth Hover School. And it was interesting because even then, you know, back in the 90s, it was late 80s, 90s, that it was very much a diagnostic approach that, you know, even Mac said, you know, I'm going to give these people psychological tests to make sure they're not crazy, and then we'll go from there. So there was a lot of dissection, a lot of diagnostics, a lot of just evaluation of experiencers. And I think that we went through that time, and that time's over. As well as, you know, this need that just feeling like because I'm an ET experiencer, I'm weird, or that, you know, I'm having these experiences that no one else is having. But in fact, many people, millions of people are having these experiences, and quite frankly, they're all the same. They all kind of have a similar line to them. Sure, you know, there's some differences, but, you know, by and large, they're all pretty much the same. And I think what the free survey did was it took it that next leap, where experiencers now can give their own message and speak for themselves. And I don't think that we have ever been there before, but we are now.
Yeah. Experiencers to me are, as I say, you're not going to solve this until you talk to them. I mean, they are interacting with whatever the phenomena is. Messages and the spirituality of the thing. Do you think it's going to end up being a very spiritual sort of phenomena? And is there any particular messages that they want to get across?
I would say that it's going to be holistic.
Okay.
My view, as in terms of what it's integrated into my life and my ongoing contact, is that it's holistic. That spirituality is connected to my emotional life, and my emotional life is connected to my physical life, and, you know, my physical life is connected. My emotional, physical, spiritual life is all part of my consciousness. So I would say that. That this is really a redefinition of humans, where, you know, if you look back on Western Christianity, or, you know, much of material science, it's about dissociation, it's about fragmentation. And I think the extraterrestrial experience is about integration and actually empowerment are the two messages that I think I get more than anything, that humans, via their relationship with extraterrestrials, and especially co-creating with extraterrestrials, that they feel an empowerment of their race. Wow. And that they know that these may be lost, may be forgotten, but yet inherent abilities that we as humans possess, oftentimes grounded in our consciousness and our ability to work in that field, that's what's going to really define our race. It's not going to be, you know, how many rare minerals we can mine off the moon. I mean, that's not going to move our civilization forward. Actually, when we talk about civilization, one of the things we talk about in the Institute for Exoconsciousness is actually building an exoconscious civilization. That's what we need to be about. Civilization is different than culture. Culture is really about perspectives and ideas and sort of cultural agreement of something. Civilization is really about tools. Civilization is about tools and the means of actually doing something to create a different earth, a different way of living with each other. And so from the perspective of the Institute for Exoconsciousness, we're doers. We're all about the fact that, you know, obviously the state that the earth is in right now and the state of technology right now, we're going to need some very radical forms of healing and forms of living that we don't really have yet. And to keep the human species alive, quite frankly.
Yeah. You started very early. Do you believe there's a soul contract involved here? And can you talk a little bit about your very early experiences? You remember very early having contact, right?
Right. I started about age 3 in terms of my memory. Came in about age 3. I always had childhood effortless contact, quite frankly. There was never anything that I felt was abnormal or weird or scary. I just had a very flowing kind of contact. I had contact with extraterrestrials. Of course, I was on the craft quite a bit. I went to star school in the craft. But I also went under the ground. So I lived in West Virginia. In Clarksburg, lots of holes in the ground there with all the coal mines. I used to go under the ground. I mean, literally, I would move under the ground and work with the beings that were in the earth.
Wow.
So that was a little different. It took me a while. I think moving to Arizona really helped me because I locked into shamanic tradition here. And when I lived in Arizona before, I've always lived like a stone's throw from the reservation. So I always kind of, there's vortexes open through there. And I've always gotten a lot of guidance in terms of my, I think I was doing shamanic work when I was a child. I didn't know what I was doing though, but so that's been my life. It's been with me throughout my life. I mean, there's been different times when it's been more intense or easier or.
And do you believe the soul contract idea or that it was from lifetime to lifetime?
Go
ahead.
That's sometimes in the mastermind, we've had a couple sessions where we literally talk about, as ET experiencers, that we have the experience of creating souls, that we have been part of teams that create souls.
Wow.
And it's absolutely a soul experience. And it's I don't think we have a clue what the soul is.
Yeah. Well, they're helping us to understand this. I would think.
Absolutely, and we're helping ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes two.
They have the messages of reincarnation or the messages of oneness and these sort of things that experiencers. And it's too bad that. Do you think we're making any headway in terms of getting experiencers to get some sort of recognition or some sort of understanding in the last couple of years that. Is there any ground being made?
Honestly, I can't say. But that question has become more and more a question that I don't need to answer. It doesn't really matter. After living in Washington, D.C., especially where I usually got 3 responses when I told people what I did and I talked about my exoconsciousness work, they would either literally loudly cackle at me, cackle. Or they would snub me and say kind of mean things.
Yeah.
Or a very small percentage, maybe 1% or 2%, would be interested. But so I got over that need for affirmation really fast. And
it's all about yourself. You're here to do.
It's about me getting up there and you getting up every day. It's about this radio show. It's about what experiencers are doing. Quite frankly, it's more about what experiencers are doing than what the ETs are doing. I think that whole era of an analysis of what do the ETs want and, what's their message and what do they look like and where do they live? I think we're at this juncture. I think it's coming back to humans. What do the humans think about the ETs?
Yeah.
And this is what the survey did.
Wow. Okay, we got about a minute left, but I need you to quickly hit 2 little points, orbs and portals. Can you do that in a minute?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've experienced both. I mean, when I lived in Phoenix back in I moved here in 92, so when I would have like a shower of orbs. They're intelligent. They're part of the whole contactee process. They're part of this whole extraterrestrial presence. When I had my most intense orb visitations, that was also my most intense extraterrestrial visitations as an adult, I would say. In terms of portals, we can psychically feel portals opening and closing, and we are able to open them and close them. This is all about humans working with the earth, working in one with the earth, with our psychic ability. The earth is conscious. The earth is not some, unconscious rock. And it's up to us to learn how to to work with the earth, and that's being a shaman.
Beautiful. And your website is exoconsciousness.com. There you go. I love your message.
Oh,
anything I can do to help you pass the message, we're exactly on the same page. So thanks for doing this, and let's do it again. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Good night.
Back to you, Race.
You've been listening to The Cameron Files with Grant Cameron. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission from the KGRA DB is strictly prohibited. The Cameron Files, in direct cooperation with the internet website presidentialufo.com.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.